You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 174A by Rudolf Steiner. It is 12 lectures for members of the Society, Anthroposophical Society, held in Munich between the 13th of September 1914 and the 4th of May 1918, translated by Christiana Bryan, and it's entitled Europe Between East and West in Cosmic and Human History. Lecture 1 was given on the 13th of September 1914 in Munich. It is to my deep satisfaction that karma has enabled us to meet this evening, and for me to say a few words in these solemn times. Above all, at this moment, we would like to think of those who are out in the field, sacrificing their courage, their lives, their blood, for the tasks set for humanity by these extraordinary times. First and foremost, we wish to direct our loving, help-imploring thoughts to those who have often sat among us in our communal contemplations, and who are now abroad, having to take direct part in those great events that are bringing national and human karma into evolution, initially to those connected with us, and then more widely, to all those involved. Then we want to nurture an onward perspective, looking ahead in a specific way, both in an immediate and in the widest possible sense, such as we also seek in the course of our spiritual stream, which binds each soul with every other soul in being challenged by these colossal events. Let us direct our loving, beseeching thoughts to those out in the fields, and in token of our bond with them, let us stand up and dedicate the following words to them. Quote, "Spirits ever watchful, guardians of your souls, may your wings bear the beseeching love of our souls to those earthly beings entrusted to your care, so that united with your power our prayers may radiate help to the souls whom they lovingly seek." Close quote. We wish to send out our loving thoughts to you, that Christ the Helper may be with you, whom we seek, Christ who calls upon our souls, challenging them, seeking out harmony amidst disharmony, that he will lead those souls to whom he has to apportion suffering, in certainty to the redemption they need, so that the purpose mapped out for human and folk karma is fulfilled. With you, O souls, do we wish to be united in the sign that connects us with the sole true spirit of the earth, with Christ? What has apparently so suddenly engulfed what we have to call all earthly humanity could long have been foreseen. It erupted so surprisingly because, it has to be said, occult sources have also had a hand in these events. Influences that have only since 28 June gradually been revealing themselves. During these times, it has been possible to acknowledge ever new aspects of spiritual worlds. I can only allude to what I mean here in a few words. When I returned in July from Sweden, from the Norrköping lecture cycle, I had to alert someone who is, in a certain sense, connected with current events, as to how that event in Sarajevo had some remarkable consequences for occultists, how it had been an outer symbol, and how curiously differently this deceased person behaved from all the others who could hitherto be observed in death in occult fields. It was in this way that in the occult background there also broke out what, in such terribly rapid steps, played out as events on the physical plane during the last days of July and the first days of August. However, those disposed to keeping their distance from spiritual life must lately have had certain premonitions and inklings of a spiritual world, have been occasioned to become aware of the presence of a spiritual world. It can indeed be said that the experiences earthly humanity is undergoing are unprecedented and daunting. Dear friends, wishing as I do to address a few words to you, let them be connected with remarks that have often, over the years, been reiterated within our spiritual scientific considerations. What should we seek as our deepest soul connection with the spiritual world? That it should grant us certainty and inner strength. Certainty that amid all the vicissitudes of the times, all the vagaries of events, there is something firm unto which we can hold fast. In times such as these, more than a belief in the unconquerable nature of spirit life and its tasks can imbue our souls. We need to learn to connect this faith in the victory and indomitability of the spirit with outer events. In early August, as the first squalls of war declarations were mustering from the most varied directions in the world, I had to recall words recently spoken, which may engrave themselves deeply upon each of us, words just reiterated that affect us very directly. An important figure said the following in a prominent place a few weeks before the outbreak of hostilities: "We and all our forces are in complete and amicable agreement. We fell out this spring after the machinations of the press started up in Russia and were echoed in the German and Viennese papers. Let us take no notice of press issues. Let's stick to the neighborly friendships of old." Another thought-provoking statement was issued in June: "The general easing of tensions is making progress." A further phrase in that same statement claimed, "Talks with England are not yet concluded, but are being conducted in the same spirit of friendship that characterizes all relations with Great Britain." Just think about now. Just think how changeable is what human beings believe at the moment in the physical world, and what they will be obliged to see over the course of events even in the coming weeks. Do reflect on the surging, storming, havering, hectoring events of this physical world. Do remind yourselves how necessary all this surging and storming is. I'd like to say, what can be believed today will prove to be untrue tomorrow. How essential it is amid this turbulence to have something solid and certain onto which to hold, something which will remain true tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, and for all eternity. What is true in those terms is truth from spirit sources, truth of the spirit's mission, pervading all human evolution. I would like to mention something because it is quite symptomatic and is not personal, really symptomatic and symbolic, speaking to the soul. You know that the first volume of titled The Riddle of Philosophy came out in July. Volume 2 was printed as far as page 206, when war broke out. It was just at the point of transition from the thoughts of the French philosophers Boutreau and Bergson to the German philosopher Preuss, and was referring to the way in which Bergson renders a thought in a slightly frivolous, superficial way, skimming over it where he previously approached with robust thoroughness the unknown, and solitary Preuss as he prefigured our theosophical worldview in the last third of the 19th century. I was trying to portray that solitary thinker correctly. It then turned out that the print run had to be interrupted and continued later. Just at that transition from France to Germany, war broke out. I had to see those two-thirds printed pages as a symbol of what was taking place between Western and Central Europe by way of the transition in my description. Other issues might appear symbolic. Here I am remembering our building in Dornach, which was also able to thrive to a certain point, albeit not as far as we would so dearly have wished. Perhaps some of our friends know how fervently it was desired, in face of salient facts and as long as this made sense, that this building could be finished by the 1st of August this year, not only as my heart's wish, but as a necessity for all to see. One might now reflect whether it would have been good had the building been finished by 1 August. In face of the facts, something such as a wish could not be combated, and among several construction issues that needed solving, about which I will not speak today, was the problem of the acoustics for a larger space, and its solution through greater resonance. It was in July, when the building was already timber-shuttered, that a few words spoken at a particular spot in it confirmed an inkling that this acoustic problem could be solved once the building was finished. At certain points it could be heard through the emergent resonance and the occult calculations for its location, how words and music could be expected to sound, how they could really be expected to resound as they should. It was a kind of ideal, even in those first days of August, to hear the word spoken there that was to sound from out of the spirit. And yet what our friends first heard in our building was the reverberation of cannon fire as it thundered on the nearby Alsace fields of slaughter. Thus did the space we had, in a sense dedicated to the resounding of spirit words, first become witness to cannon fire rumbling in its close vicinity. Other friends of ours saw, as it were symbolically, the great ideal we were awaiting. We were awaiting the annunciation of spirit light, sounding forth from spiritual worlds, that this light of spirit worlds would come into being. Yet what transpired was that the lights of Istein Fort could be seen on several nights, stretching across, piercing and lighting up our building for 4 minutes at a time, the sound and light of present events. Other thoughts and feelings were also able to pass through our souls, however. On 26 July, I was speaking with several of our friends, amongst other things, about our building, and had referred to the gravity of the times piercing our windows. I must say I could only read through tears the letter which one of our younger friends, who had been with us on 26 July, subsequently wrote to his mother. Immediately afterward he was called up and returned to his home country of Austria. From the spiritual strength he had gained through our spiritual striving, this relatively young member found the strength, in the most beautiful and, I must say, pure and holy way, to take up the lot assigned him by his karma. And again it was another of those who had been with us on 26 July, who himself wrote to me en route to the Serbian theater of combat, full of feelings flowing from certainty in the spirit and faith in its triumphant victory, on the one hand, and nourished on the other by enthusiasm for his participation in the events of our time and his place within them. Truly, my dear friends, one feels souls growing at this time, souls maturing. And it spoke to our hearts both beautifully and magnificently when observing that all the feelings and sensations that had suffused and passed through the souls of our friends also turned out to be suited to leading people to the right place, in the right way, amid today's grueling situation. When speaking of the certitude that ought to be gained from considering the spirit and spiritual being, this certitude is intimately linked with our chosen motto, based on Goethe's words. It is rendered like this: wisdom lies in truth alone, or wisdom exists only in truth. Among the deep hopes one is justified in cherishing out of these times is that everything connected with wisdom lies only in truth will be imprinted upon humanity, precisely through the great pain and deeply affecting tests of these times. Everything contained in the words wisdom is in truth alone needs to impress itself ever more deeply upon people. And now much has already been brought about by the great teacher in overcoming materialism. Shortly before the outbreak of war, I read what a respected journalist had written. He says the following, quote, "Despite the reproval of Mr. Liebknecht, I remain convinced that responsible agents of government are not only justified, but are obligated to repudiate truth and to affirm untruth. This right, this duty of collective morality, in what is conveyed by those under their leadership, is restricted by two preconditions. Untruth must be neither provable nor counter to state interests." Close quote. Just compare this declaration with the axiom we decided upon when we founded the Anthroposophical Society, quote, "Wisdom lies only in truth." Much will collapse, because quite a different sentient ethos has come to inhabit the souls of those who sense the seriousness of the present situation. How often, my dear friends, have the words spoken in this place elicited what sounds like this: reality is not constituted only by all that takes place on this physical plane, but human thoughts have even greater reality, strength, and power of agency. Let us admit, for it is true, such things have only been said on the basis of foundations bearing a spiritual imprint. Just now, on the very complex journey I had to make, a document came my way bearing the date 1 September 1914. It contains a very nice essay by a soldier, Robert Michel, who jots down his battlefield thoughts. His essay details how the mobilization came about and how he and his comrades set off into the unknown. His last words are important for us. Quote, "But every single remnant of the monarchy has a duty to galvanize to its utmost their supportive forces until decisive victory has been achieved. All the fine words, heartfelt acclamations, good wishes and blessings accompanying our exodus increased our confidence. They were slivers that have not been lost. This bounty of psychic strength needs to accompany our army continuously, and the will for victory needs to vibrate, to shimmer, from every single individual to the fighters on the front. This is why nobody fled the decisions being prepared in the North. Those obliged to passively watch the immense deployment of armed forces and nations from the sidelines also need to contribute their sliver, their shard, sending forces to souls on their way. Those who have God's ear should pray. Those who cannot pray should gather all their thoughts and willpower in aid of a fervent longing for victory. And those with nothing else to offer should cross their fingers and repeat, 'We must be victorious. We must be victorious.' In this way, even the weakest will have contributed to victory." Close quote. A soldier leaving for battle writes from the field words that sound like an echo of what has often been said on a basis of spiritual life. Whoever cannot pray, let them gather their thoughts and will forces in a fervent wish for victory. Now we see belief in the spirit at the start of momentous events. We need subscribe to no illusions. Some things may look different in the near future, but the time will come when what has been implied in these few words will become reality. World progress has to take place, and what must happen will happen. Sometimes this occurs in a remarkable way. People's wills are led in gradual stages, so that one can see how step by step, no differently from the way a teacher would do it, directions they will later take are poured into souls. In truth, one need only watch briefly to see how, above human powers, spiritual powers are spreading out, working pedagogically for the greater progress of humanity. It is now timely to nurture a thought which may affect one but is seldom considered. 1866. German brother stood against German brother. German against German. No more than a decade passed, 1870 to 71. A portion of Germany had to take part in an enormous event, one in which the other part could not participate. One of my teachers at Vienna High School often said something that struck my heart deeply at the time. Quote, "We Germans in Austria must be aware that what happened is our fate and not our fault, that we were not allowed to take part in an exceptional event. Now, this time, both parties are as if welded together by an iron force, where once they were opponents, when each stood separately without the other." Close quote. This is no coincidence, but important and momentous. And this major insight has taken less than a century to affect all subsequent times. Human progress and what the spiritual hierarchies will for humanity has to take place. but it can come about in the most varied ways. By a certain point in time, something quite specific has to have been achieved. Let's say, not that this necessarily tallies with what I was wanting to say, that by the year 1950, a certain amount of willingness for sacrifice, capacity for love and selfless conquest over egotism, has to have been expended across humanity. Let's say that by 1950, what has to happen will have happened in accordance with the demands of the time. On the one hand, this will come about by speaking to human hearts that the power of the Word is to be trusted, that what holds the fate of humanity in its hands will approach human individuals spiritually, seeking to advance them to a point where the Spirit can work upon them. But the other taskmaster, that second teacher who speaks through living proof, often has to step in. And haven't we seen his successes? What immeasurable sacrifice, human love and selflessness have been engendered in an amazingly short time, in this materialistic age, since the great instructor stepped forward and the war, on the one hand so terrible, yet which has, on the other, enabled what occultism terms iron necessities to be achieved, the goals essential to this particular moment in human evolution. Streams of blood are being shed, precious lives wilt and fade away. Others are ripped from physical life in an instant when the hostile bullet strikes. All this is happening on such a vast scale today. What does it signify? It is a great sacrifice, my dear friends, an enormous sacrifice on the altar of pan-human evolution. On the one hand, is something that has to transfuse humanity, something to which humanity has to be surrendered in order to progress, and on the other is the necessity for sacrifice. It has been infinitely telling for me to watch how deeply bound, beyond death, are those souls who are directly involved in these momentous events. It could often be seen how those who had been laid out by an enemy bullet would be taken up into spiritual worlds, not yet having awoken into their greater individuality, but still bound up with all that was transpiring below. I am not sure whether you can empathize with the extent to which one is affected by seeing behind those fighting on the battlefield their psychic personality, which has already encountered death, protecting and abiding with the one below still fighting and bound to the physical plane. They belong to those occult experiences of mine which I could not compare with any others. Unawakened fighters who, having gone through death, are still connected with events below and are simultaneously like doubles to those still fighting in the physical. In spiritual worlds too, realities exist that can pour confidence into our hearts, even if such confidence is not easily won. Who would have thought what percentage of humanity is fighting each other? Who would have thought, we are just at the start, this war has only been raging for a few weeks? What losses of human souls these few weeks would have cost? They might be inclined to waver, wondering what might ensue were this to continue for a long time. Though it often dismays me, it can really take one aback. The thought revives me that what is right will happen, and what is presaged by spiritual worlds will take place. If one can muster the certainty that not only are the living engaged in fighting, but that the dead remain bound to their destinies, then sufficient strength will be available to us. Something else occurred to me recently. Our society unites in a single spiritual stream those from the most varied peoples, nations who are presently fighting each other. This can be something of a comfort to us. We look back on times when we were quite dissimilar and had little in common, back to the age which the Bhagavad Gita describes for us, the oft-depicted human conditions and times when people lived in small blood-related circles. The transition from blood-relatedness to a time when blood fights blood is described in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is directed by the Great Spirit Truly, over there are your brothers, and here are you. You will fight each other, though the same blood flows in their veins as in yours. Yet in the spirit there is the potential to find a compensatory equality. What fights each other evolves from out of what ought not to be at war, another iron necessity essential to human evolution. The spirit bridges the gap that causes brother to fight brother in enmity, so that the other develops the means to bridge the disharmony existing between them. Those times are unlike our own. We take the opposite path within our spiritual movement. We seek to gather up what was strewn across the earth. Those belonging to the most diverse nations connect with each other in community, becoming brothers within our ranks. Now we are seeing how here someone comes from France, having left friends there, how they have had to face the massed Germans and have to expect to face their anthroposophical friends in battle. It is the opposite situation here. Scattered members of humanity are seeking each other in spirit, and we will find one another rightly once we understand the spirit of truth in all seriousness and can take hold of it in all earnestness. We just need to find ways to do this. I must say that we Germans have a hard time in making our way, possibly the hardest. It may sound strange to you that I say this, but it is difficult for us, because, without wishing to boast, it is always hard to justify ourselves. It is easier to justify someone else's entitlement than one's own. It is also difficult, because it will not be easy for present humanity to see things with what I'd like to call the requisite objectivity, with a sufficiently unbiased overview amidst the perspectives often put forward in our spiritual science, and which are also found in the lectures on folk souls. It is going to be necessary for anyone seeking to grasp spiritual life in the true and genuine spirit of our times to learn how these folk souls, those true and genuine folk souls, form a kind of choir in which they already live together in harmony. But one has to find one's way to their being, and this can only be done in spirit. Actually, this is not the right moment to draw attention to the feelings and sensations being voiced in the background of souls at present, so I would like to divert your attention toward a way of communicating that is open to us, a way of holding a dialogue, a closely discreet inner dialogue, with the spirit of the nation to which we belong, and finding the right path for our souls to follow. I can only advise you, if you allocate a few minutes, especially at this time, you can use the following words to orient yourself in the present world situation. Quote, "You, spirit of my earthly realm, reveal the light of your age." Close quote. Why your age? With spiritual beings, one says your age, where on earth one would say, quote, "the light of your being." Close quote. Age is for the spirit what being is for earthly existence. Quote, "You, spirit of my earthly realm, reveal the light of your age to the Christ-endowed soul, so that striving I may find you in the choirs of the spheres of peace, resounding in the praise and power of human hearts devoted to the Christ." Close quote. Here we find a way to the folk spirit to whom we belong, and the way from this folk spirit to the dialogue between that folk spirit and Christ, teacher of all folk spirits. When they come together in the Christ, they will be duly foregathered, because for all these folk spirits leading nations as they do, Christ is to be regarded as their teacher, as can be learned from the book titled The Spiritual Guidance of Humankind. I often have cause to hope that what is being communicated is not true. In an Eastern National Assembly, in their Duma, in which the ruler had rallied his people to join the war, the ultimate cry was, "The God of Russia is great." What a dreadful invocation, were it so. thoughtlessly. They call upon a spirit whose character is imagined as acting within their own limited context, instead of invoking a spirit so connected with the destiny of humanity that also those opposing them in enmity place themselves in its service, seeking the salvation of all humanity as well as their own. When the Christ leads a people, he leads them such that in seeking their salvation, they seek the salvation of all humanity. We are justified in calling upon the folk spirit with whom we are inwardly connected, so that we look aloft to the way in which it in turn communes with Christ. Via our folk spirit do we commune with Christ. Many thoughts are prepared in this way, thoughts which remain in the spiritual atmosphere of humankind until such time as a meaningful war is followed by a significant peace. A sacrifice, as I say, is one that is brought on the altar of humanity, and it is sacred blood that flows onto our earth, blood which is witness to those who are now fighting a war between peoples, whose souls are rising up out of the physical into spiritual worlds, and who will return in future incarnations to be important members of humanity's spiritual advancement, a sacrifice indeed, a great sacrifice. What is now happening has to take place in this way. Whoever wants to look back to times long past, seeking first causes, needs to look back to the Punic Wars of the 3rd century BCE, to the time when the Roman military leader, you can read this up in historical records, used boarding ramps and ladders to achieve their initial decisive victories. It is debatable as to what the original event of this present war was. Future history will tell. It is difficult to go into these things. Many things lead us back to the times when the Romans were warring with Germanic peoples, when human fate was being determined for many millennia. Then we come to the third great event, that is, our present situation, which will have as significant an effect as did the Punic Wars. Despite their, albeit long, extent, they were minor by comparison with today's world affairs. Yet the qualitative effects of the Punic Wars still project into our times. Just as the great determining events of humanity recur in a certain sense, connected as they are with migration periods, a whole human cycle is encapsulated in the term. Just as then in Rome, what needed to be resolved had to take place, that the form of the human eye, capital, as it was in the 3rd century BCE before the event on Golgotha, transformed into its later state, so that this form of eye would find its way via the Romans into all that has happened since then. In just such a way must today's form of eye, pivotal for the next cycle of human existence, be similarly placed within a war between peoples. This goes to the deepest impulses of humanity. Once we have connected with what we have together been pursuing spiritually for years, we can believe in victory, in the victorious nature of the Spirit. Then we will face all that comes toward us, armed with that belief, knowing that whatever takes place under the leadership of the higher hierarchies is justified and will take its course. It just depends on us following this course faithfully. We will be doing this if we find the right way to observe our karma, if we do not shrink from the great tasks set by these momentous times, and when we can thank spiritual science for all that it can impart. Of prime importance is this, that spiritual science sharpens our gaze and our spirit to see that we do whatever our personality allows, and that we are in the right place to do what is required. The more factually and impersonally we do this without focusing on anything else, the more will spiritual science have sharpened our gaze, the more will it have made our hearts receptive, and the more will we have understood the language in which these grave times are speaking to us. One of the spirit-given tenets of the present, shared here among friends, brings to mind the countenance of suffering which we so very often encounter. The pain engendered in souls is so enormous, the sacrifice demanded so great, that the willingness for sacrifice and our receptivity to the pain of others must be equally great. Christ is only resurrected for many people once they understand that no pain can exist for another that is not also our pain. For wherever he appears, it becomes our pain too. For as long as it is possible for us to see the pain of another without sympathizing with it, the Christ cannot fully inhabit the world. We should not be able to evade another's pain. This ideal is hard, exalted, and wide. Yet Christ's ideal is also hard, exalted, and wide. It is only fulfilled when our own wounds do not burn more fearfully than those borne by the other. It is therefore good to make ourselves fit to offer help through the following words, which we can direct toward a community or those suffering pain. Quote, as long as you feel the pain which I am spared, does Christ, unrecognized, work in world existence? For weak remains the spirit in one who suffers only through their own body. Close quote. Try to really immerse yourself in these words. If in the first phrase we can especially feel a connection with the folk spirit, then with these lines we can penetrate to a sense in which humanity's pain, the pain of a human community, resonates in our own souls, allowing us, in a truly Christian sense, to do everything we are allotted to do. May we do this in present times, imbued particularly with a sense of the Spirit. My dear anthroposophical friends, the wound caused by the bullet would not heal were there no healing forces in the wonderful microcosm of the human body. It is good that an approach to treating and binding wounds, as practiced by our dear friend Dr. Pipers, is being carried out in some of our branches. It is beneficial because we can all get into situations requiring its application. But we also need to be aware in such situations that spirit is a reality, and that whatever we do during the treatment of wounds, whatever the injury sustained, will be all the more efficacious if we act with spirit presence of mind than without, so that we have the right thoughts when tending a wound in the human organism. We may think, quote, well up, O blood, in welling be active, lively muscle enliven cells, loving care of warming hearts be healing breath, close quote. For in the blood welling from a wound are the signs that behind it lie forces, lie healing forces for wounds, quote, well up, O blood, in welling be active, lively muscle enliven cells, close quote. The cells that die off when a bullet has passed through them, you send the right feelings to those applying dressings and helping their fellow human beings. Quote, well up, O blood, in welling be active, lively muscle enliven cells, loving care of warming hearts be healing breath, close quote. Let us allow this attitude to infuse our souls. Let us fill our entire being with this ethos when helping our fellow human beings. And then, my dear friends, the Spirit will in turn aid whatever efforts we can physically muster as physical human beings. And let us individually think of those individuals out there in exposed places. Let us think of them at the start of our meetings, they who are outside our circles and laboring on battlefields. A verse for this purpose, which I dedicated to those on the battlegrounds at the start of today's meeting, can be used by each one of you and directed toward an individual. Quote, spirits ever watchful, guardians of your soul, may your wings bear the beseeching love of my soul to the earthly being entrusted to your care, so that, united with your power, my prayers may radiate help to the soul whom they lovingly seek. Close quote. If you wish to send your thoughts to several or many out on the battlefields, you could say, quote, spirits ever watchful, guardians of your souls, may your wings bear the beseeching love of my soul to those earthly beings entrusted to your care, so that, united with your power, my prayers may radiate help to the souls whom they lovingly seek. Close quote. The great events now in progress will be a teacher of love and selflessness, and also a teacher for spiritual worlds. Let us hope that they will be. Then the great sacrifices, those tremendously great sacrifices made by humans through their blood, will be offered on the altar of spiritual beings. And what can be so painful to initial view will then serve to attain humanity's highest aims. The more we imbue ourselves with this feeling, the more readily available will those thoughts be when, after the war, widespread peace is agreed. The 20th century is called upon to transform many things by way of destiny, world order, and among human affairs. Whatever is achieved in this respect will save humankind from having to repeat this event in future. The victorious triumph of spiritual life is a concept that has often found its way into our hearts during this time. Try to understand how we have been witnesses to events that are intended to be decisive, not for a short time span, but for long, long ages in the evolution of the human spirit. Let us try from out of this seriousness to summon the love and selflessness that will lead us, each according to their strengths and abilities, to put ourselves in the right place. Our karma will certainly guide us, and those who cannot at the moment step in to help, do not be downcast. It may also depend on saving some strength for later, when many will need to recognize the moment when karma calls them. May there then emerge, precisely in those recognizing spiritual science here and now, the reflection that what may happen in the outer world becomes ever more evidently manifest, that the beings, forces, and will impulses of the spiritual world work into all world events, into human spirits, into human souls, into human hearts. May a bond arise out of all the grief and pain we have experienced, a bond that connects human souls with those divine spirits who rule, guide, and bring about human destiny. Human souls will discover this crucial point. May human souls uncover what is meant by our phrase, may the Christ-endowed human soul discover through its striving. Now, my dear friends, it may be that we cannot all be involved in the fighting. Maybe we cannot all do everything our ideals would wish. But we can all participate in these momentous events in the sense just outlined, in the words just spoken. In many and various places across the country, one here, another there, wherever we may find ourselves, to whichever circles we belong, and with whomsoever we are humanly connected. These are the places where love can be active, where love gives us strength. That is the place where pain and sorrow, human misery and need, call us to action, to think, to participate. The place where we feel we rightly belong, where we long in our hearts to be deeply connected with the other person, to whom we look because both their and our most holy shared treasure is sacrificially protected by their courage and their life's blood. Let us therefore turn our thoughts, as at the beginning, toward those who, as just described, are consigned to the events of our time. Quote, spirits ever watchful, guardians of your souls, may your wings bear the beseeching love of our souls to those earthly beings entrusted to your care, so that, united with your power, our prayers may radiate help to the souls whom they lovingly seek. Close quote. May the spirit whom we seek through our science, seek with our hearts, whom our spiritual movement wishes to serve, lead us. May it also lead all humankind, because those under his leadership will not only follow their own goals, but in following him will hold all humanity within their sights. People who know how to trust Christ will find their way rightly. So, my dear friends, we have striven to direct our thinking toward the Christ over the years. May the times that have just broken in upon us prove to be times of testing, which we will overcome. And may we link our souls so strongly with the teachings of the Spirit that they become our aids in times of travail, that they become a strength not restricted to us, but accessible to all humanity. May the Spirit leading us upward to Christ help us to imbue ourselves with this living, cosmic, earthly Christ, so that our thoughts may be rightly sent to those about and abroad, where folk and human destinies are being decided, so that the right Spirit may help them, that Spirit so wisely leading human evolution, bestowing upon it salvation and blessing. Let us do all that we can, so that the sacred sacrificial blood soaking the earth may, when called upon, serve its vital role in the onward ascent of earth evolution, so that out of what is happening on earth, spiritual progress may come toward physical earthly evolution, such that it may perceive, truly, it has been worth spilling blood for the earth if such progress is brought about. All those not immediately able to sacrifice their blood must have the awareness to work in such a way that spirit can penetrate earthly evolution, that they must do everything possible so that spirit imbues earth evolution, and that those having spilt their blood should have done so in aid of something valuable. Because if we cooperate toward such evolution, looking with unclouded vision at the wider circumstances, then we will be conducting ourselves commensurate with not needing to feel ashamed in face of those at the front. Were we to fail in this, our eyelids might not, after all, allow us that unclouded view. Were we, on the one hand, to feel integral to our time yet, on the other, to fail to muster the strength, to act creditably on such feeling. Spiritual science will embody this credit, if it can contribute to giving people such strength. Strength which can both support those who have given their blood, while likewise strengthening those serving in other ways, each in accordance with their situation. Spiritual science will then be able to reflect, I was a means by which humanity, in its time of great travail, had an opportunity to succeed in its trial. Then will spiritual science have achieved its divine goal. With these simple words, my dear friends, I would like to close this evening, which I am so glad to have been able to experience with you. The end of Lecture 1.